It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
We have the great Sarah Huckabee over here, Sarah.
Thank you, Mr. President. Obviously, I thought it was going to be a little warmer here in Wisconsin. But it's pretty hot in this room tonight. Thanks to all the amazing things you've done for our country. Last year, this night, I was at a slightly different event. Not quite the best welcome. So this is an amazing honor. I'm so proud to work for the president. They said he couldn't win in 2016, and he did. They said that he couldn't make our economy better, and it's booming. They said he couldn't rebuild the military, and he's done it. They said there was collusion, and there wasn't. They've questioned him at every step, and he's proven them wrong every single time because of all of you. Thank you, Mr. President, for leading our country. Thank you.
I just wanted you to hear that. Sandy Rios with you this morning. That was President Donald Trump in Green Bay, Wisconsin, Saturday night. Something like almost 70,000 people tried to get in, and of course they couldn't. That was a few too many people, but that's how many people wanted to come. They waited in line. There was terrible weather predicted, and some waited overnight, and it was just amazing. The place was packed, and it was really a great rally. And the reason I played that part of it is because you will recall that a year ago, the White House Correspondents' Dinner took place, as it always does, in the nation's capital. It's always a big event. I've been there before where, I mean, it's huge. It's like 1,000 people at this one banquet. And the tradition, of course, is to roast presidents and other people in the media. But over the years, it's gotten increasingly mean and, of course, increasingly just horrific for conservatives. And so last year, I think it reached its apex. You will remember when Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the press secretary for the president, was sitting on the dais. And you could see her in the camera, and the hostess, the vulgar, vile hostess who was the comedian, began to berate her, and so did everyone. They talked about her looks and everything. It was just disgusting. And yet she sat there, the lady that she is, and sat there. And this year, the president ordered his staff not to attend, and of course, last year he did not attend because they've tried to do the same thing to him, but this year he wasn't having it. So he brought Sarah with him to this rally. But now here's the thing you don't know from that clip. Sarah is nowhere near the president. She's back behind him, you know, not, I don't even know if the people could actually see her. And so he brings her up. I forgot in what context, I mean, her name. And he just says, Sarah, thanks. She's over there. Sarah's over there. And if I actually play the clip again, this is what happened when he's just talking about her. She does not want to come up. She's not planning on coming up. And this is what it sounded like.
I don't want to dwell.
No, I want clip 6 again, please.
We have the great Sarah Huckabee over here, Sarah.
Okay, I just wanted you to hear that because she was not planning on coming forward. In fact, she was very reluctant. I think Adam probably edited that a little bit. It took a long time to get her to come down, and she did. And then she said what she did. And, of course, she's so eloquent. She really is. I have to say, I have to confess again publicly, I completely underestimated her, totally. And she has just been an amazing contribution to, I think, it's not just for President Trump, it's for all of us. She represents the people, and she tells it like it is, and that's why we appreciate her so much. And boy, she takes those hits and gives as good as she gets in all the best ways possible. It's just amazing. So that was Saturday night. Meanwhile, at the Washington Press Corps gathering in Washington, D.C., which went on business as usual, except this year, I don't think they could find someone to host it. As I recall, no one, they all felt it was too dangerous. And so I think they decided to go with the no-host approach to it. And I wanted you to hear the opening. Now, the opening was, well, I guess he was the host, Oliver Knox. He's the president of the White House Correspondents Association. And this, I'm sorry, I'm already prejudicing you, but let's see, where would you rather have been, Green Bay or Washington, D.C. at the press corps dinner? Let's listen.
I don't want to dwell on the president. This is not his dinner, it is ours. And it should stay ours. But I do want to say this. In nearly 23 years as a reporter, I've been physically assaulted by Republicans and Democrats, spat on, shoved, had crap thrown at me. I've been told by senior administration officials of both major parties that I will never work in Washington again. And there was a brief moment in Afghanistan when I thought a soldier not quite old enough to shave would shoot me dead for the crime of taking a picture inside the presidential palace. And yet, I still separate my career into the period before February of 2017 and what came afterwards. And that's because February 2017 is when the President of the United States called us the enemies of the people. A few days later, I was driving my then 11-year-old son somewhere, probably soccer practice, when he burst into tears and asked me, is Donald Trump going to put you in prison?
You know why? I'm just asking, would you rather be in that room with all the, you know, everyone dressed up, all the press that we love so much? And, you know, did you find yourself recoiling, in fact, not believing what he said? I did. He might have been telling the honest truth, but it's very hard to listen, and the whining is unbelievable. So he says, this is our event, it's not the president's, and I say, you know what, you can keep it. You can keep that event. I actually think the president may have tanked that. I'm not sure that event will ever recover, but we'll find out next year, won't we? Well, let me just, I want to just say a couple of things before we get to some serious news. First of all, I want to talk to you about Share-a-thon, because what I didn't get to tell you, because I didn't really know, on Friday, what we had for this spring Share-a-thon was the best we have ever had, ever. In the history of the American Family Association, this was the best Share-a-thon ever. We met our goal and then some. We doubled, I was reading the wrong part there. We had the most amount of pledges we've ever had by a lot, and we exceeded our goal. And so, listen, thank you. It wouldn't happen without you. It would not happen without your generous support. And so I just want to say, again, thank you so much for that. Thank you for supporting us, not only by listening, but also by, you know, writing a check or getting out your credit card or whatever it was you did. And we are just so eternally grateful. And I know that we will do our best to rise up to your trust this year. You know, and as we kind of plow through all this news, we'll be doing our very best. And then I want to tell you something funny, okay? This is funny in a sort of sick way. This is from the Babylon Bee. You remember when Mrs. Clinton, this is not funny. Why am I laughing? Because it's the Babylon Bee. Remember when those killings took place in the churches in Sri Lanka on Easter Sunday weekend, where so many were murdered? And you recall that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama both refused to say Christian. They said Easter worshipers. Easter worshipers. They were not so reticent about the killings in the mosque in New Zealand. They talked about the persecution against Muslims. That was fine, but nothing about Christian persecution, just those Easter worshipers was how they reviewed it. So the Babylon Bee did a guide to alternative names for world religions, and this is their best offering. Christians are Easter worshipers. Hindus are cow avoiders. Muslims can be hummus enjoyers. Jews, tiny hat wearers. Mormons, polite bike riders. Atheists, teenagers. Jehovah's Witnesses, like Mormons, but on foot. And then this one I love. Scientologist removed by our lawyers. So that was the Babylon Bee surrendering one. A guide to alternative names for world religions. You know, that's the kind of thing we could open the phone lines and we could do our own. It would be, we'd have a lot of fun with that, but we won't do that today. All right. Well, on the serious note, there was a shooting in a synagogue just outside of San Diego yesterday or Saturday. And I want you to hear the report before we talk about it. Let's listen.
Here is a young man standing with a rifle, pointing right at me.
Rabbi Israel Goldstein was leading the Passover celebration at Congregation Chabad when a man stormed in with a semi-automatic rifle.
He had sunglasses on. I couldn't see his eyes. I couldn't see his soul.
34-year-old Almec Peretz was hit in the leg. He was inside the synagogue with his daughter. His niece, 8-year-old Noya Dahan, was also shot. 6-year-old Lori Gilbert Kay was killed, shielding the rabbi.
Lori took the bullet for all of us. She died to protect all of us.
John Ernest, date of birth, 6-8-99. He's 19 years old.
San Diego Sheriff Bill Gore identified the shooter, saying his gun may have malfunctioned after firing several rounds.
It was a Border Patrol officer off duty. As Ernst was leaving the facility, he obtained a weapon and shot at Ernest.
The alleged shooter got away uninjured, then called 911 to turn himself in. While searching the home Ernest shares with his parents, police discovered what appears to be his manifesto posted hours earlier on social media. The attack comes exactly 6 months after a man killed 11 people at Pittsburgh's Tree of Life Synagogue, the deadliest attack on Jews in recent U.S. history. A commemoration was held today to honor those victims.
We need to battle darkness with light. No matter how dark the world is, we need to think of light. A little bit of light pushes away a lot of darkness.
All three survivors from yesterday's attack have been released from the hospital. That suspect, as we mentioned, is in police custody, charged with 1-count murder, 3 counts attempted murder.
All right. Well, I guess he got interrupted. I don't know what the rest of that was, but you know, it's interesting. What strikes me listening to that, because that's the first I've heard that report, is the contrast in the reports on this shooting. And Adam, while I'm talking here, why don't you pull that Fox one? Because there are so many other details that they omitted from that report. First of all, the woman that was killed, this is really interesting. They said that she was shot at a place near her heart. And there is a soldier that was omitted from that report. He's an Iraqi veteran. And he is allegedly, according to the report that I heard, the one that actually went after the shooter. And then turned his attention to helping this woman, trying to help her survive. A doctor who was in the synagogue was standing nearby and realized that the Iraqi soldier, former, needed some help with this woman. And so he rushed to his side and bent down to start giving her help. It turned out the woman was the doctor's wife, and the doctor fainted. So I think that, you know, it. I believe it was the woman who, there was only one woman who died. It had to have been her. Can you imagine that? And so there were two people in the synagogue, from my understanding, that actually stopped this shooter, apart from his gun also jamming. It was a Iraqi veteran and then a Department of Homeland Security, or former Border Patrol agent that I think the rabbi had asked to come in. The other part that's missing, there's actually a lot more to say about that. The other part that's missing is that the rabbi, in part of his statement, talked about a long conversation he had with President Trump and how comforting it was. You know what? When we come back, we'll play that Fox report, and then I have a lot more actually to fill in the blanks with on that story that I think you'll find interesting. All right, this is Sandy Rios on this Monday morning. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks again for your generosity for Share-a-thon. God bless each and every one of you. We'll be back right after this. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Like, I wanted to have the abortion because I was trying to hide a situation.
When a young mom in crisis walks into a preborn pregnancy center,
she's welcomed with open arms and given love, support, and a free ultrasound to meet her unborn baby. This young woman not only chose life for her baby, but heard the message of Jesus Christ and was comforted from the guilt and pain that plagued her. Preborn centers lead the nation in providing free ultrasounds. When an abortion-minded woman sees her baby on ultrasound, she's 80% more likely to choose life for her baby. For $140, you can sponsor 5 ultrasounds. And 100% of your sponsorship goes towards saving babies. To find out more, go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say baby. Your love can save a life.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. We've been all over the country helping disaster victims who lose everything.
It's truly a blessing. I really don't have the words to express.
And yet, they see a glimmer of hope when a volunteer shows up.
Building the home, that's the second reason we're here. The number one reason is to share the gospel and give them hope.
It's everything that's right in America. I mean, it really represents the best that we have to offer.
That's one of the main reasons for doing it, is being able to be the hands and feet of Jesus and coming out and working with so many wonderful volunteers.
I just feel like it's important in this day and age to teach a child how to serve.
Please go to our website, 8daysofhope.com, and click on Get Involved, submit your email address, and the next time we go anywhere with a disaster, we'll invite you to come along as well.
I love coming in the job room because you can see these pieces of paper, they aren't just a piece of paper.
Right.
It's a family that's hurting, and it's a gospel opportunity.
You know, I just thank God, you know, for this moment. I mean, I'll be back in my home, and I know it's going to be awesome.
Come love others with 8 Days of Hope.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
A matter of privacy. That story next.
Truett McConnell University.
So my name is Atara. I'm a senior and my major is psychology. I love Truett. Maybe a lot of other schools out there. You can go to bigger schools. You can go to schools that's way far away from home. But in the end, one of the things that I realized is that God called me here, and that's why Truett is the perfect place for me. And if God called you here, then it's the perfect place for you also.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
A 10th grade girl at Honesdale High School in Pennsylvania was in the girls' locker room the other day. While she was undressing, she heard a man's voice. She turned around and saw a boy who identifies as a girl staring at her.
I glanced down and I could tell that he was wearing women's underwear and what was underneath it. When I knew that a man was looking at me, I felt very violated and very scared, especially looking at me while I'm getting dressed.
The young lady filed a civil rights complaint with the Department of Education. Her attorney says the teenager was sexually harassed, her privacy violated. But the school district says they've done nothing wrong. They say the transgender student has a right to use the locker room and shower facilities of his choice. The district said if the biological female has a problem undressing in front of a boy, she should change somewhere else. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Rabbi Yisrael Goldstein says, you know, it would have been a bloodbath otherwise. Listen to him describe what happened when the shooter came after him.
Here is a young man standing with a rifle, pointing right at me. And I look at him. He had sunglasses on. I couldn't see his eyes. I couldn't see his soul.
You can see that sling around his arm. Rabbi Goldstein was shot in the hand. The gunman killed 60-year-old Lori Kay and injured 2 others. But listen to what happened next here. Iraq combat veteran Oscar Stewart was in the congregation and actually went after the gunman here. He told the Daily Caller his military training just kicked in. He says, I knew I had to be within 5 feet of this guy so his rifle couldn't get to me. So I ran immediately toward him and I yelled as loud as I could, and he was scared. Stewart said he chased the gunman all the way out to the car, and that's when Border Patrol agent Jonathan Morales ran outside to help and fired off several rounds as the suspect sped off.
Oscar Stewart, a former soldier, jumped into action. He tried to tackle down the gunman, and Jonathan pursued him and was able to discharge his weapon.
Just some incredible stories of heroism coming out of this. Rabbi Goldstein also spoke about the comforting phone call he received from President Trump.
He shared with me condolences on behalf of the United States of America. He was just so comforting that I'm really grateful to our president for taking the time and making that effort to share with us his comfort and consolation.
And probably the most important part of his talk, he said that his community will stand tall and terrorism will not take us down.
All right, that was the Fox report. Very different, right? In fact, she alludes to a Daily Caller report that actually just came in my box this morning. And this is kind of more on this Oscar Stewart, who was the veteran I mentioned just a few minutes ago. Stewart yelled in the synagogue, "Get down, you blank, I'm going to kill you." That's what he said to the shooter. He said he doesn't remember any conscious thought from the moment he heard gunshots. He just acted on instinct. He said, "I knew I had to be within 5 feet of this guy so the rifle couldn't get me. So I ran immediately toward him and I yelled as loud as I could and he was scared." Stewart served, by the way, in the Navy in explosive ordnance disposal from 1990 to 1994. Then he enlisted in the Army in 2001 because of the September 11th terror attacks. Looking back, it was kind of a crazy idea to do, but I did it. He was deployed to Iraq in 2003, left the military in 2004 as a staff sergeant. He's now a construction worker. And he said he was in the back of the synagogue when the gunman opened fire. All the people began to run out. He said the shooter killed one woman, blew off the finger of the rabbi. And he said, "I heard gunshots. Everybody got up, started trying to get out the back door. But I, for whatever reason, I didn't do that. I ran towards the gunshots. When I came around the corner into the lobby area, I saw the individual with a gun and he fired 2 rounds. And I yelled at him and I must have yelled very loud and he looked at me and I must have had a really mean look on my face or something because he immediately dropped his weapon and turned and ran and then I gave chase." By the way, he chased him to his car. The shooter locked himself in the car and the guy who's unarmed is trying to get into the car. The shooter then reaches for a rifle and that's when the Border Patrol agent who attends the synagogue came running out to the parking lot, yelling for Stewart, the veteran, to get down. The Border Patrol agent had a gun, but he was off duty. And the only reason he had a gun is because somebody handed it to him, a civilian weapon. And they both tried to get into the car to stop the shooter, but he took off and they called the police. And that's how that all happened. That's interesting to me because of gun control. It sounds like the Border Patrol agent couldn't even have a gun. And it was just because a civilian had a gun that they were able to do what they did. So he says, "I don't know," Stewart says, "I don't know if I consciously made the choice to potentially sacrifice myself, but I did." And this lady, she stood, the one that he helped and the one that died, she stood and she jumped in front of the shooter and she saved the rabbi's life. When somebody said I was a hero, I'm like, she was a hero. I just did it instinctively like an animal. There was no conscious decision. I just did it. So that's an article from the Daily Caller. I just thought it was interesting. And then, of course, you'll want to know a little bit about the shooter because, of course, you know how it's going to be spun. At least we expect it to be spun that he's a white supremacist like all Trump supporters. But here's the story. This is in the Washington Times. The suspect blasted President Trump in his so-called manifesto as a Zionist Jew-loving traitor. John Ernest is his name. He posted a 4,000-word screed about an hour before the shooting. He said his motivation was that October 27th attack on the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh. And as for Mr. Trump, he said, "You mean that Zionist, Jew-loving, anti-white, traitorous," and then a horrific comment I can't read, "Don't make me laugh." So he was a nursing student at Cal State University of San Marcos. You know, I'm going to speculate here for a second. Remember that President Trump, of course, you heard what the rabbi said about his offering, but the left, of course, are saying this about the president. Everything is his fault, of course. Sophie Elman Golan says, "While Jews were shot for being Jewish by an armed white man this weekend, Donald Trump has emboldened white nationalists and incited white nationalist violence and spoke at the NRA convention to advocate for more guns for more white men." And that's just an example of some of the kinds of comments. And so here we go. We have this mixture of the stirring up of hatred against Jews. That's for sure. We're seeing it just this growing in exponential proportions in this country. And then, of course, we have everything blamed on President Trump, you know, which is just nonsense. In fact, I want to read to you an article written by Joel Pollack. Joel is an editor for Breitbart News. I've known Joel since he was very young, actually. He's from Chicago. He's an Orthodox Jew, wears the cap and the yarmulke. And he says in his in this article, "I am a Jew, an observant Jew raised in Skokie, Illinois, a town that resisted neo-Nazi marchers and which at the time was home to the largest population of Holocaust survivors in the world outside Israel. Nazis murdered many of my grandfather's relatives in Poland." And that's the way he starts the piece. And to just before I read the rest of what Joel has to say, I'd like to repeat what we played last week. This is part of Joe Biden's speech or his announcement that he's going to run for president. I want you to hear at least the part we played last week. Let's listen.
Charlottesville is also home to a defining moment for this nation in the last few years. It was there on August of 2017 we saw Klansmen and white supremacists and neo-Nazis come out in the open. Their crazed faces, illuminated by torches, veins bulging and bearing the fangs of racism, chanting the same anti-Semitic bile heard across Europe in the 30s. And they were met by a courageous group of Americans, and a violent clash ensued. And a brave young woman lost her life. And that's when we heard the words of the President of the United States that stunned the world and shocked the conscience of this nation. He said there were, quote, some very fine people on both sides. Very fine people on both sides? With those words, the President of the United States assigned a moral equivalence between those spreading hate and those with the courage to stand against it. And in that moment, I knew the threat to this nation was unlike any I had ever seen in my lifetime. I wrote at the time.
All right, that's enough. You get the idea. He is Charlottesville, Virginia. This is the lie that continues, that this got pastors. Many of you may not even know, even now, that that was a complete hoax. The spin on what happened in Charlottesville was absolutely not true. But I will, rather than me spilling out what was really happening there, I'll let Joel continue in his piece. Again, he says, "I'm a Jew, an observant Jew raised in Skokie, Illinois," and you heard the rest of it. He says, "Former Vice President Joe Biden trivialized the suffering of Jews and exploited the memory of the Holocaust for personal and political gain, and he used a lie to do it. Biden suggested that President Donald Trump and the nearly 63 million Americans who voted for him support the rise of a new wave of anti-Semitism and white nationalism similar to Nazi Germany in the 1930s. Biden claimed falsely that Trump called neo-Nazis who marched in Charlottesville, Virginia in August 2017 very fine people, when in fact the Trump said that the neo-Nazis, quote, should be condemned totally, end quote, as the transcript proves. The former vice president was repeating a hoax perpetrated by Democrats and the mainstream media to cast Trump and his supporters as bigots who are, in Biden's words, a threat to this nation. This is the same Saul Alinsky divide and conquer nonsense the left has employed for years. It is a dishonest and shameful attempt to put 63 million people on their heels. I am outraged. I'm outraged because 8 years ago I joined the most pro-Israel website in the world. It was founded by my two best friends and my mentors, both Jewish. She's talking about Andrew Breitbart. These men created a site designed to call out the exact hypocrisy exhibited by Biden this morning. And the idea for the site was conceived, guess where? In Israel. I am outraged because next Wednesday I will visit Auschwitz for the third time at the invitation of the March of the Living, the annual International Holocaust Memorial, as a representative of Breitbart website. And then he goes on, he says, not only does Joe Biden have no right to paint 63 million Trump voters as anti-Semitic, but he has also no standing to claim to be defending Jews. And then he tracks Biden's history, international incident when he condemned Israel for building apartments in a Jewish neighborhood in Jerusalem. He campaigned for the Iran nuclear deal, knowing that Iran wants to destroy Israel. He courts Al Sharpton, who is an anti-Semite. I'm abbreviating what he wrote. And then here's the part that I want to make sure you understand. Today, Biden, meaning that was the day of the announcement, Biden actually called Antifa, The violent, black-clad left-wing thugs who descended on Charlottesville with clubs and sticks, a, quote, courageous group of Americans, end quote. Not only is Antifa vehemently anti-Israel, but it is ideologically committed to violence. By praising Antifa while falsely associating Trump with Nazis, Biden sanctified the use of violence against Trump and his supporters. Moreover, by repeating the Charlottesville hoax, Biden is giving permission to Democrats to continue to ignore anti-Semitism in their own ranks. And then he talks about the Democratic Party, promotes and embracing Ilhan Omar, promotes and embraces Rashida Tlaib in spite of her ties to terrorism or to terrorists. President Trump has been the best friend that Jews have ever had in the White House. Just this week, Israel named a town after him. He moved to the U.S. He moved the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem. He pulled out of the Iran deal. He deported a Nazi war criminal. And meanwhile, Joe Biden is attempting to divide Americans, spreading fear based on a lie. We'll put that on our Facebook page because this is something you will want to share. I'm sure that there are a lot of people that still don't know what really happened in Charlottesville. And I didn't explain it as thoroughly as I'd like to. Let me just say that it wasn't what you thought it was. It was a setup, and they are going to continue to use it in the campaign, and I'm sure we will come back to it at some point. But that's an example of what happened and kind of the background of what happened over the weekend. And those are probably details you might not hear, so I want to make sure that you hear them today. Oh, the border crisis continues. In fact, a border agent was on Fox just this morning, Aaron Hull. He's the chief Border Patrol agent, and this is what he had to say.
Those people realize that as long as they're being apprehended by us, they're still likely to be released on their own recognizance. That's because the country, the U.S. government as a whole, does not have the detention and removal capability to hold them in custody until their immigration hearing. When they know that they're going to be released, even though they're caught, it serves as a huge draw to enter this country illegally. A lot of people refer to all of these family units as asylum seekers, but that's really not the case. Matter of fact, most of those that we encounter, when they're caught at this step in the process, they don't indicate fear of return.
Yeah.
They indicate they want better opportunity.
Yes, so the problem has not changed. You see the pictures. If you watch Fox, I don't know if the other cable outlets are continuing to show it, but the flow has not stopped. And you just heard him say, everyone's getting in. Pretty much everyone's getting in. Meanwhile, Pope Francis has donated $500,000 to assist migrants in Mexico. And the statement that they released basically says that in recent months, thousands of migrants have arrived in Mexico, having traveled 4,000 kilometers on foot. Of course, that's not actually true. They've been bused and clothed, many of them. Coming from Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala, men and women, often with young children, fleeing poverty and violence, hoping for a better future. However, the U.S. border remains closed to them. Well, that's really not true. And so the Pope is sending $500,000 to assist them, which, you know, I don't have a problem with helping people who are struggling. What I have a problem with is misstating what's happening when actually it's the Americans who are absorbing this tremendous cost. And we are certainly absorbing it in country when they come across that border. And we're hearing that many of them, most of them, I don't know what the percentage is, but let's just say they're getting across the border in the thousands. They're coming by like 1,000 a day, 100,000 in the month of March alone. So, it's not exactly true. And I think that to try to give aid in the guise of the fact that these poor, mistreated people are trying to come for escape violence, which is really not true. They want economic, some of them, maybe. But for the most part, they want to work and they want the benefits of being in America. And so, and to that end, let me just tell you that HUD is planning on cracking down on illegal immigrants taking advantage of public housing. They are actually going to start insisting that illegal immigrants cannot live in public housing. They are flooding public housing, living with other families already here. And Americans who are already here on the waiting list are not able to get in public housing. So HUD is going to crack down on that. Meanwhile, a Massachusetts judge, remember the story where she helped an illegal immigrant get out the back door because an ICE officer was going to arrest him? He'd been deported like four times. Well, that judge has been charged with obstruction of justice, and so has one of the officers of the court. So that's really, I mean, that's good, is it not? And I've got more to say about that, but I better not rush through it, so stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
You will know them by their fruits.
My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. The Southern Poverty Law Center has lost its way. The bigotry and racial discrimination experienced by its former employees is evidence of SPLC's hypocrisy. The SPLC has become a hate-for-cash machine, described from within as a highly profitable scam. Its founder was fired, its president resigned, and its top lawyer departed as the scandal spread. With its corrupt culture of racism and sexual harassment, Twitter has distanced itself from the SPLC. Others who maintain links to the SPLC are endorsing their corruption. It's time for the rest of the tech world and the media to cut ties with the SPLC.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
The National Day of Prayer encourages us to love one another. The National Day of Prayer is Thursday, May 2nd, a day when people of faith across the nation gather for one important purpose, to pray. The American Family Association encourages you to meet at your city hall from 1220 to 1240 local time to pray for revival in America. Let's pray together across the country. To find out more about the National Day of Prayer, visit nationaldayofprayer.org.
This is Frank Gaffney, host of Secure Freedom Radio. It's your personal daily intelligence briefing about the challenges we face, how they're likely to affect you, and what we can do about them. You can find Secure Freedom Radio here every weeknight at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. Tune in to learn from our extraordinary experts what you need to know and will want to share. Join us for Secure Freedom Radio tonight at 11 Eastern, right here on AFR.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. There's a question for every public official. Do you agree with Franklin Graham about Pete Buttigieg? Buttigieg is the out loud and proud homosexual who is running for president of the United States. Reverend Graham correctly believes Buttigieg needs to repent of the sin of homosexuality rather than treat it as something to be flaunted, praised, or politicized. Certainly Graham is right. Let's put every political leader, Democrat and Republican alike, on record in response to this question. Do you think homosexuality should be flaunted and used for political purposes, or is it something contrary to the moral standard of God? How we answer this question as a nation will determine whether we operate under an open heaven with God's blessing or under a closed heaven with God's judgment. It's time to find out where decision makers stand.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. In June 2015, shortly before Donald Trump announced his candidacy for the presidency, he learned at an event we organized in Iowa that federal bureaucrats and electric utility executives were relentlessly impeding progress on protecting the nation's most critical of critical infrastructures, our electric grid. He was incredulous and expressed his determination as president to, quote, knock their heads together, unquote, and secure the grid. On March 26th, President Trump did just that, issuing an executive order directing action on countering specifically the threat posed to our grid and the society that utterly depends on it from enemy use of electromagnetic pulses or similar effects from intense solar storms. Unfortunately, today, electric industry obstructionists are unveiling a so-called study by their in-house think tank dismissing such threats. It will be used to defy the president. He's right, they're wrong. Time to really knock heads. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Three officials now, administration officials, have directly been told by the Trump administration not to testify before your committee. None of the investigations are related, by the way, to the Mueller report. We're talking about Stephen Miller testifying on immigration, Carl Klein testifying on security clearances that were given, John Gore testifying on the U.S. Census, and a question involving U.S. citizenship. You know, do their justifications for denying these individuals the right to go and appear before your committee hold up?
No. This is an assault on the legislative branch of our government. And it's an assault on the constitutional framework of our government. And if it's allowed to stand, frankly, the legislative branch will be a pale shadow of what it was intended to be by the Constitution of the United States. So, no, we're going to resist. And if a subpoena is issued and you're told you must testify, we will back that up. And we will use any and all power in our command to make sure it's backed up, whether that's a contempt citation, whether that's going to court and getting that citation enforced, whether it's fines, whether it's possible incarceration. We will go to the max to enforce the constitutional role of the legislative branch of government.
So that was Congressman Jim Connolly from Virginia, along with Wolf Blitzer on CNN. So you see how this is going. The committee, Gerald Nadler, has sent out, 88 subpoenas, something like that, and demanding everything, everything. They want everything. They're going to do their own research now that Bob Mueller is finished. The report has been issued. Now they're going to start from scratch all these committees and go over all these things. And you hear what the White House is saying. They're saying, no, we are going to assert executive privilege. You've had enough. We've given everybody over to testify except for the president. He's the only one that didn't testify, but he answered questions in writing. All the questions that he was asked, he answered, even if it wasn't to their liking. And so the president said, no, we're not doing that. We are not doing that. And so now Gerald Nadler, of course, is expecting Attorney General Barr to testify, I believe, this Wednesday. So now there's a dispute over that. Attorney General Barr, according to what I'm reading, Nadler wants Attorney General Barr to be questioned not just by congressmen, but then by staff attorneys. And Attorney General Barr is saying, no, I'm not going to answer questions from your attorneys. The way this proceeds, or should proceed, always proceeds, is that members of the House themselves do the questioning. That's the way it is in the Senate also. That's their job, their role. And you're not turning over the attorney general, these are my words, to be interrogated by other attorneys as though he's on trial. And so he's refusing to do that. So Gerald Nadler is, digging in his heels, insisting. He says he's threatening now to subpoena the attorney general if he skips the hearing. The witness is not going to tell the committee how to conduct its hearing, period. That's what Nadler said on CNN on Sunday. So it'll be interesting if they try to arrest the attorney general. I'm not sure. It's amazing how people feel very differently about this. It could be argued that people that are proponents of President Trump and his policies can't see any harm that he's done. And people who hate President Trump can only see harm. And the way they see the investigation depends on how they feel about the president. I think that's true. But I also know that there is a truth here. There is truth, not a truth. I don't like that. There is truth. There is truth here about this investigation, and it's not represented in this next interview. This is an interview that took place over the weekend. Andrea Mitchell interviewed Sally Yates, and you may recall Sally Yates was the former acting attorney general who was fired by President Trump. There were a couple of things that Sally Yates did. First of all, before she was fired, she is the one that instigated or played the central role on taking out General Flynn. Remember that? She is the one who raised the issue of the Logan Act. You remember the Logan Act was something that was written back, or it was passed, I think, in the 1700s, and it's never been used. And it basically said that American citizens cannot negotiate with foreign powers if they're not, in other words, if you're not the president, part of the administration, you can't negotiate with a foreign power. Well, it's never been used, and yet she claimed that Lieutenant General Flynn had broken the Logan Act. He'd violated the Logan Act, and it was, harumph. How dare he do that? As, acting a national security advisor to the president, he talked to the Russian ambassador. That's the issue. It was ridiculous, but it sounded serious, didn't it? Sally Yates saying, but Lieutenant General Flynn, he has violated the Logan Act. Well, yeah, and so we all go, oh, the Logan Act. Well, we don't know, but see, this is just stuff that's made up. And Sally Yates is the one that refused to implement the president's order on restricting immigration from terrorist countries. Remember that? And so that was on that basis. When she refused his order, that's when she was fired. So that's the Sally Yates, and she is talking with Andrea Mitchell, and it is it's a love fest. Let's listen.
Yeah, he's referred to them as scum. He's accused people of spying. And, I think those are words that we really shouldn't be throwing around about the men and women in law enforcement and in our intelligence community.
The Mueller report cites 140 contacts, according to an Italian in the New York Times, at least 140 contacts, including 13 from the president himself with Russia during the campaign and afterwards in the transition. Does this mean the president is completely exonerated, even though, because of a lot of other issues, not being able to interview the president, not being able to talk to a lot of the other witnesses, emails that were eliminated, there was no grounds for a prosecution?
Well, you know, if you read the entire Mueller report, I think it paints a really devastating portrait of a president and a campaign who welcomed a foreign adversary's illegal interference in our election, who then continually lied about it and then used the power of the presidency to try to thwart an investigation into his own conduct. That's not exoneration.
Well, the report makes it clear that there is no exoneration on obstruction. But so speaking first to the Russian issue, which you just raised, if not for the Office of Legal Counsel prohibition against indicting a president, should there have been further steps? Do you think that there, in fact, on obstruction, would have been an indictment?
Well, you know, I've been a prosecutor for nearly 30 years, and I can tell you I've personally prosecuted obstruction cases on far, far less evidence than this. And yes, I believe not the president of the United States, he would likely be indicted on obstruction.
That's, you know, nothing short of what we call, if you're familiar with the Soviet tactics, it's a disinformation campaign. These two women are, you know, hardcore leftists. Probably, I don't know if they're friends. They sound like they're friends. If I had to diagnose, I say these are girls who get together and chat. And this is their hit piece. But it's meant to misinform the public. Because mislead and misinform. It's called disinformation. Because I could take each thing apart, but I'll pick a few things. Andrea Mitchell says 140 contacts with the Russians. They had 140 contacts with the Russians, 13 by the president alone. Look, there's nothing. I've had probably 140 contacts with Russians. There's nothing wrong with having contacts with Russians. The president is a businessman, a billionaire businessman, multinational. They were working, you know, his attorney, no matter how disreputable, was working to try to negotiate like something like a Trump Tower in Moscow. You know what? That's okay. Do you know Coca-Cola sells Cokes in Moscow? Did you know that we have been, you know, doing trade and business with Russia since the breakup of the Soviet Union? This is not a shock. And this is not illegal. But let me just tell you, a lot of churches have gone to Russia. We've had dealings with the Russians, too. And so, I mean, it's just a silly premise. And then when she talks about how the president, he welcomed the involvement of a foreign power in our election. That's just silly. In that report, it says time and time again, not clearly, of course, because the Mueller report wouldn't want to be clear about this, that the Trump campaign and all the people that were approached rebuffed it. They never took the Russians any kind of offer up. And actually, the truth is that the Russian so-called Russian interference happened under the Barack Obama presidency. It didn't happen under the Trump presidency. And Barack Obama did precious little about it. In fact, that brings me to another article that I want to bring to your attention. I don't have time to go through all of this, but I want to put this on our Facebook page. It's called 25 Questions for Robert Mueller. And one of the questions goes to what we're just talking about. Since Donald Trump was not president when Russia attacked our electoral process, and since you specifically were tasked with conducting a full and thorough investigation of the Russian government's efforts to interfere in the 2016 presidential election, did you investigate why the Obama administration, including CIA Director John Brennan and Director of National Intelligence James Clapper, let this happen? Did you look into any connections between the Hillary Clinton campaign and Russian interests, since you also specifically were tasked with investigating any matters that arose or may arise directly from the investigation? And it's widely known that the Clinton campaign was digging up political dirt on Donald Trump from Russian sources before the election. There are a lot of great questions in this. So I would commend this article, and we'll put this on our Facebook page again, 25 Questions for Robert Mueller. And then to Sally Yates's a whole business about spying and how harumped she is that the president would insinuate that members of the intelligence community were spying Well, all right, let's go to a different source here. This is a letter written to Attorney General Bill Barr, and it's coming from Chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, Chuck Grassley, and Chairman of the Senate Committee on Homeland Security, Ron Johnson. And this is the letter. Dear Attorney General Barr, during your April 10, 2019 testimony before a Senate Appropriations Committee subcommittee, you stated that you are looking into the genesis and conduct of intelligence activities directed at the Trump campaign during 2016. You further stated that spying did occur, and that you believe it is your obligation to look into the question of whether surveillance activities by the Federal Bureau of Investigation or other intelligence agencies were adequately predicated. We share your concerns about these activities and are troubled by the apparent unauthorized disclosures of surveillance efforts and other classified information during the same time period. We bring to your attention information that may assist your review. And they go through a bunch of other pieces of information that they know about. They are equally concerned that there was spying on the Trump camp. So that's actually happening right now, too. I want you to hear Joe DeGenova was on the Laura Ingraham show. And Joe, of course, yeah, Joe is a former federal prosecutor. You know who he is. And I don't want to talk up his time. So I want you to hear what Joe has to say about what's happening in response to what the Mueller report and all these investigations for the last 2 years. Let's listen.
Well, there's no doubt this is pretty simple stuff for career prosecutors like Rudy and myself. It has been evident from day one that there was a brazen plot to exonerate Hillary Clinton illegally, and then if she lost the election, to frame Donald Trump. This dossier was a knowing part of that. It was created by Hillary Clinton. It was created knowingly by John Brennan as part of a scheme to do everything they could to harm Donald Trump. The problem for Brennan and Clapper and Comey and Baker and all of them now is that the FISA court has already communicated with the Justice Department about its findings. And their findings are that for more than 4 years before the election of Donald Trump, there was an illegal spying operation going on by FBI contractors, four of them, to steal personal information, electronic information about Americans, and to use it against the Republican Party. There are going to be indictments. There's going to be grand juries. John Brennan isn't going to need one lawyer. He's going to need five.
All right. And so then Joe goes on to describe. I want you to hear the rest of what he has to say. This is clip four.
It's about the rule of law and privacy. The Obama administration, for more than 4 years before the 2016 election, allowed four contractors working for the FBI to illegally surveil American citizens illegally. The FISA court has already found that. By the way, Robert Ray mentioned that there is the Horowitz report coming out in May or possibly early June. There's another report that everybody has forgotten about involving James Comey alone. That will be out in 2 weeks. That report is going to be a bombshell. It's going to open up the investigation on a very high note, and there will be criminal referrals in it. The FISA court abuse is the center of this entire abuse of governmental power. And the chief judge of that court has already ruled that the FBI broke the law and that the people at the head of the Justice Department, Sally Yates, John Carlin, the assistant attorney general for the National Security, all knew about it and lied to the court. The FISA court is a hero in this entire story.
Yeah, okay. So, isn't that amazing? I wanted you to hear everything that he said. And so we will be talking more about there are more details coming out day after day after day. So fasten your seatbelts and continue to pray that God's justice will be brought upon this situation. Interestingly, we played the Sally Yates clip, and then Joe says she's going to go down too. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.